This morning I'm going to be in 2 Kings chapter 2, so if you use your phone Bible or you have a Bible with you, you know, the print kind, those book things that you still have those. There are some in the pews as well. I'm going to be in 2 Kings chapter 2. I'm going to add a few things to that, but I'm going to mostly be in 2 Kings chapter 2, and I'm going to just walk through a little bit slowly some of the verses in there, and so we're going to use that throughout the message. But first I want to ask, does anybody remember the movie Groundhog Day? Remember, oh yeah, some of us, yeah, we remember that movie came out. Remember Bill Murray, classic Bill Murray. He's a weatherman and he wakes up and it's Groundhog Day again, and then he wakes up the next day and it's Groundhog Day again, and he wakes up the next day and it's Groundhog Day again. And I was thinking about that movie, which I know is old now, but I was thinking about that movie and thinking about this message and about this series that we're in, that sometimes we get caught in a loop. You ever been caught in a loop in your life? You're like, oh, here I am again. I thought I took another path. I thought I took another road, but here I am again. I'm in the same place I was again. I went this way and I ended up back where I started from again, and I feel like I can't get out of this thing. You've heard this phrase, I don't know who's responsible for it, but insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results, right? Anybody insane this morning? Oh, come on, you are, right? I mean, I am. I do the same thing, and I want something different to happen. But then it's like Groundhog Day, and I wake up the next day, and the same thing is there again. Maybe it's that bad habit that I want to kick. Or it's that thing I need to get out of in my life. Or maybe it's that new thing I want to start that I don't start. Maybe it's that diet that I just can't seem to get on. Or I was talking to a guy 2 weeks ago, and he's like, Tom, you know, you're at that age now. You can't just get by without exercising anymore. Every day you need to do, they call these people doctors. I don't know what they know. You know, you need to do something every day. And I'm like, well, I've never had before. You know, but I'm in this loop and it's really hard to get out of it and to do something. It's kind of like, anybody remember the game Chutes and Ladders? I hate that game. Don't you? Cause I like progress, you know, and I'm like, I'm moving up and I'm moving up and I'm like, I'm going to win this thing, and I'm there, and then boom, down the chute. And they're like, oh no, I'm red, yellow, you know, and I get up there and I'm down the chute again. It's funny when it's Chutes and Ladders, but it's not so funny when it's your life, right? When you think you're on another road, you think you're moving in another direction, then you find yourself back where you were again, repeating. One way to think about our series that we've been walking through the last couple of weeks, and if you haven't been here, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to the podcast. Podcasts are wonderful tools to kind of go back and do some spiritual development throughout the week and kind of revisit some things that maybe you heard something on Sunday morning, and maybe you got done and you said, Tom talks way too fast and he puts too many words in one sentence and I can't follow along. I don't know where he is. You can actually slow down the podcast. Did you know that? You put it on half speed. But go back and listen to the weeks before. What we're talking about, here's a couple questions you might want to think of as you go through this, is does history repeat itself in the Bible? And if it does, why? Why do the same kind of stories keep coming up? And our pastors are brilliant at seeing this stuff, and they've been teaching me all these things. They're like, did you know that happened before? I'm like, what? You know, it happened way back here, and then why? Or why is Jesus pointing back to this thing that happening? And why does history keep repeating itself in the Bible? And then with that question is this other question is, do we have to repeat ourselves? Do we have to stay in the loops? I think these two things are connected. There are loops in the Bible, but they're not the same loops. They're reminders that send us off in a different trajectory. Jeremy said last week, he said, sometimes, you know, we have to take the first step, and you're going around that merry-go-round, you know? Did you ever do this when you were a kid? You're going around the merry-go-round, and you're like, jump now, no, jump now, and you just can't jump, you know? There's a point where you've got to jump. The Israelites last week come up to the River Jordan and they're carrying the ark, and there's that step that they've got to take. And that's a scary first step. And he challenged us to trust God and to take the first step. Take the first step into the river, into whatever God is calling you into. Speaking of rivers, the Jordan River, right? We began the series talking about John the Baptist, who's standing in the Jordan River, and he's baptizing people like we were just talking about. He's putting them under the water and he's saying, do something new. Teshuvah. Teshuvah is return. But he's also asking them to do something new. He's saying, repeat, go back to do something new. Yeah, maybe I'm back to Chutes and Ladders, right? I think I've gotten there. And then God says, no, I want you to return to the beginning. Have you ever said, can we start over? Maybe not in Chutes and Ladders, because you want to win, honestly, right? But in your life, have you ever said, is there ever a point in your marriage, if you're married, where you said, can we start over? Have you ever had a business relationship where you just get off to the wrong foot, on the wrong foot, or you present yourself poorly, and you're like, can you just forget everything I said, and can we just go back to the beginning? Can we start it all over again? Can we change the trajectory we're on? See, John believes that this can happen. This is what John is doing at the river. He's saying, you've been on this path, and you can get on a different path, but you need to return to some things. You need to get back to basics, right? You need to understand what God has been doing in history so that you can get off this merry-go-round that you've been on. You can get out of this loop that you've been on. Can we just start over again? So here's what I want to do with you this morning. I want to try to do a couple things. I'm going to walk through some scripture for quite a while, and I want you to hang with me, and I want you to hold on to these things. I'm going to introduce you to two people. How many people am I going to introduce you to? Okay, and I'm going to introduce you to four places. How many people am I going to introduce you to? Almost tricked you, didn't I? How many places am I going to introduce you to? Four. And then what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to pull out two important things out of that story that help us to get off the merry-go-round by starting over again and going to the past. Sometimes you have to go to the past to get to the future. Another great reference to an old movie. Yeah? Back to the feet? Anyway, okay. First, I'm going to introduce you to two people. 2 Kings chapter 2, I said we were going to start there. We're going to start with this verse. I am going to skip a verse every once in a while. Don't let that make you anxious. There's just way too much in this passage, so I'm going to focus on a couple of things. 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 1. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. How many people did I say I was going to introduce you to? Two. There they are. Elijah and Elisha. The Lord is about to take... So here's how our story begins. There's about to be a whirlwind. And I was thinking about this after yesterday. You understand a whirlwind. You understand the sky. Last night again, we were actually standing on my driveway watching clouds come this way and clouds go that way. And then when they hit each other, they started to do that. And I thought, uh-oh, time to get the under the stairs cleaned out. It passed. But the whirlwind, right? There's this whirlwind that's going to take Elijah away. And both of these guys are prophets. I'm going to introduce you to two of them real quick. Both of them are prophets. Now, sometimes when we think of the word prophet, we think of fortune teller. Not quite the way to think of it. Prophets are people who speak truth to power. Prophets are people who speak the truth. They see what's happening, they see it clearly, and they see it clearly because they hear God clearly. And so they hear God and they speak His truth, and sometimes they don't want to because it gets them in trouble. And so Elijah is this powerful prophet, and he is speaking truth to power, which in that time meant the kings. And particularly there was a number of kings that he spoke to. One particular king is King Ahab. King Ahab was a terrible person. Horrible, evil villain kind of person. The kind of person that builds his kingdom on the backs of other people. The kind of person who doesn't care about other people, but only cares about his own wealth and power and prestige. The kind of person who will do anything and kill anybody and step on anybody and walk over anybody to get what he wants. And Elijah hears from God, and God says, I want you to go talk to Ahab. Now, Ahab was married to Jezebel, who was also a terrible person, and she did the same thing. They were a perfect match for each other, like the perfect supervillains married to each other. And Elijah's an interesting guy because he's kind of a nobody. He's just kind of he's a normal country guy like some of us. He, you know, grew up in the country. He doesn't have fancy clothes. In fact, he has some clothes that are kind of weird, and he wears this camel hair clothes, and do you remember another guy who wears this kind of clothes? John the Baptist, right? We're starting to cycle in history now, right? In fact, when John comes, they go, is this the new Elijah? Because he's wearing the same clothes, he's saying some of the same things. And so this normal country boy who doesn't have anything to his name is asked to go and speak truth to power, to Ahab and to Jezebel. And so he does that. And when he does that, he becomes public enemy number one. They want to come after him. And he says, okay, I'll tell you what, we'll do a kind of a match between our gods. And you may know the story, you may not. On Mount Carmel, there's this match between the gods. It's a competition. And Elijah says, you bring your God, and I'll bring my God, and we'll see what happens. And Ahab and Jezebel bring their God, all their priests, all their people, and they do this, they do all their dancing, and they do all this stuff, and God doesn't do much. Baal doesn't show up. And Elijah prays to God, and God shows up all right. In fact, you know, the skies we were talking about in the last couple days, you think those are crazy? You should have seen the skies on this day. The skies go crazy, and the lightning comes, and fire rains down on the altar, which, by the way, they had taken these huge vats of water and poured them over the altar. And so gallons and gallons and gallons of water and troughs filled with water on this altar, and the fire of God consumes it all. Now, Ahab and Jezebel's people are watching this, right? Remember, country boy, king and queen, and they just see the king and queen's God defeated. And the people go, I think we need to switch allegiance. So they start to chant, Yahweh is the Lord, Yahweh is God, Yahweh is God, Yahweh is God. So imagine how Ahab and Jezebel responded. They didn't respond well. They didn't turn to God. No, they turned after Elijah. So Elijah's on the run. So now he's country boy with nothing who just angered the king and queen, and now he's running for his life. He's a fugitive. Anybody who finds him is gonna kill him. And this is the point at which Elijah comes across Elisha. Elisha is a country boy too. He's a farm boy. Elisha is living in the fields, and he's plowing the fields with he's got his plow and he's got his oxen. And Elijah comes by, and for whatever reason, Elijah knows, because he's a prophet and he listens to God. And you don't have to be special to listen to God. In fact, you can be a prophet too if you listen to God and speak truth to power. God speaks to all of us in different ways. And Elijah's listening, and he hears that he's supposed to ask Elisha to follow him. In fact, kind of, you know, make Elisha one of his disciples. In fact, this story. Again, another loop in history. When Jesus is calling his disciples, there's some connections to what Elijah is doing with Elisha. And so Elijah says to Elisha, come with me, come follow me. And so Elisha decides to leave his father. He says, can I kiss my father first, you know? And so he does that. He actually takes his plow, turns it into a bonfire, and he kills the oxen, and he cooks the oxen, and he gives it to the whole community before he goes. It's kind of like, we're going to have a barbecue before I leave. This is like, why does he do all that? It's the going away party, right? There are significant points in life when things change, right? And so you throw a party, we're going to say goodbye. So there's this goodbye party, and Elisha throws it. He's going to go. And so Elisha follows Elijah. Okay, you got my two people? Okay, I told you I'm going to introduce you to two people, and then I'm going to do what? Give you four places, okay? So we got two people now. So a little transition here. I used to have a blue Dodge Spirit, old blue Dodge Spirit. When Tristan and I were first married, we had this blue Dodge Spirit, and it was our only car, and it was an old car, which is pretty, if you know me, pretty normal. I drive older cars. Not really old, cool old cars. Like, no, just old junky cars. But anyway, we had this old car, and I was doing kind of an internship in hospital chaplaincy out in Massachusetts. So Tristan and I moved out there. We actually lived in a convent of all places. That's a whole other story. I wasn't making any money. It was one of those internships, you know, where you like work for 3 months for nothing, but you get all the education. And so I'm doing all this, and I'm in seminary. I don't have any money. I have this old car. And we meet some people that want us to meet them over, like, in the Boston area. And, you know, we're on the west side of Massachusetts. And we're like, well, we're here. We have the weekend off. Wasn't working for a church then. So, you know, I skipped church that Sunday. I was going to go on vacation. So we jump in the Dodge Spirit. Friday night after I get out of work, it's 5:30. We're crossing Massachusetts. And we get about halfway across Massachusetts. And I look at my rearview mirror, and I see a lot of blue smoke. Some of you know cars, and you know where this is going. But I see a lot of blue smoke, and the engine just doesn't have the power that it's supposed to have. And I see the speed go from 60 to 55 to 45 to 35. And so I pull off, and I blew my engine somehow. It's a Friday night now. It's about 6:30. I'm in the middle of nowhere. I don't know anybody in the state of Massachusetts. I don't have any money. And if you ask my wife this story, she'll tell you that I went into guy fix-it mode. Do you know what this is? This is guy never ask for help kind of mode. You know which mode I'm talking about? Yeah. And I'm not going to tell you how the story ends. But that's for another time. Did you ever get in that mode in your life? I can fix it. I remember calling my dad eventually after some people talked, my wife talking some sense into me, and my dad, you know, I was going into ministry at the time. My dad was like, for a guy going into ministry, you sure don't understand what grace is, do you? And I was like, oh, it hurts a little bit. I wouldn't ask for help. You see, this is a story about taking help. Elisha decided to follow somebody. Elijah said, come with me. And I don't know what was going on in Elisha's life at the time, but he could have said, no, I'm good. I got my oxen. You know, I got my people. I got my town here. I don't need somebody else to lead me. But he follows. One of the biggest mistakes we make in life, I think, is going it alone. Not just when our cars break down, but when bad stuff happens, when good stuff happens, when we just think we can make it. Elisha doesn't go it alone. So we're still in verse 1. They told me there was no second service, so I can go forever today, right? Okay, no, we'll keep going. Verse 1 again. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way to where? Gilgal. Okay, place number 1. Gilgal, I'm going to put a map up. Gilgal is located, so this is where the Jordan River is, and zoom in, and there's Gilgal. Okay, so our first place is the Jordan River, which we're going to come back to. Our first place is Gilgal here, which is just near the Jordan River. And this is an important place. And I'm going to talk about 4 important places. And I wonder, do you have an important place in your life? Like a historical place. Like a place where God showed up for you. For me, one of those places is Camp Geneva. God showed up there when I was a counselor, changed my life. I met my wife there. I had my wedding reception there. I've baptized 2 of my kids there, and a bunch of other things have happened there. So it's kind of one of those places where God showed up, right? Gilgal is one of those places. And so when the writer talks about Gilgal, this is a special place. So Elijah says, Elisha, come with me, and they walk, and they go to Gilgal. Now what happened in Gilgal? Jeremy talked earlier last week about the Israelites crossing the Jordan River. And when they came across the Jordan River, it's a big deal what happened when they crossed the Jordan River. When they stepped into that water and the water piled up and the Israelites went through on dry land. And so God says, take some stones. So I got my stone up here this morning. Take some stones, 12 of them, and set them up as a reminder of what I did here. That I brought you from the desert where you've been wandering through the Jordan and into the promised land. And I stopped the Jordan so that you could walk through, put up stones. And so Elijah brings Elisha. And I can just imagine Elijah, kind of a good teacher, here walks over and he puts his hand on the rocks and he goes, Elisha, you see this rock? Can I tell you the story of this rock? Let me tell you about how God showed up for the Israelites. Gilgal is a special place because this is the place that they camped right after that, and they set up these rocks, and Elijah walks him by, and he says, this is the place. This is where God showed up. And Elijah's trying to teach Elisha a lesson, and he's like, got it? God's going to show up for you. Look in the past as you go into the future. As you try to get on that new path, look in the past. God showed up at those places where it was dangerous, where you had to take the next step. And Elijah kind of says to Elisha, are you good? You good? Okay. And then we go to verse 2 here, 2 Kings 2, verse 2. Elijah said to Elisha, stay here. The Lord has sent me to Bethel. Right? So Elijah's thinking, okay, Elisha, you got the message. I've taught you. You've been my mentor. I'm going to move on. I'm going to go to Bethel. And Elisha responds this way, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. Like, no way, man. I'm going to learn more from you. I need to hear more from you. I'm not ready to go out on my own yet. And so Elijah says, okay, come with me to Bethel. Bethel's our second place, and I'll show you to you on a map here. There's Bethel. They go from Gilgal over to Bethel, and Bethel is one of those historical places where God showed up to. Way, 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 way back. When God calls Abraham, he sends him out from his family, and he ends up camping between Bethel and Ai. And God makes a promise to him to bless him, to bless him with generations and children and all of these things. And Abraham is a little bit skeptical about it. His wife's certainly skeptical about it. And then down the road, Jacob ends up on the banks of the Jabbok River wrestling with God and comes face to face with God. And then the next day he goes and he takes a rock and he sets it up and he goes, "This is the house of God," which is what Bethel means. Bethel means house of God. "This is the house of God where I met God face to face, and I'm going to put this rock here to remind me and to remind my children's children's children that God showed up." And so Elijah takes Elisha from Gilgal over to Bethel, and I can imagine him putting his hand on the rock and saying, "Elisha, do you know the story of Abraham and the story of Jacob? Do you know the story of how God showed up? And this is the house of God. Elisha, when you go back and you see what God has done in the past, as you try to head out into a new future and get off the merry-go-round you've been on of just plowing the fields with the oxen, when God calls you to be a prophet, you remember what God did at Bethel and what God did at Gilgal. Okay, we good? I'm done with the lesson. I'm going to move on." And so Elijah says this, which is, "Then Elijah said to him, 'Stay here, Elisha. The Lord has sent me to Jericho.'" Third place. What do you think Elisha says? "I'm not ready yet." Now, he's a good student, right? "I'm not ready yet. I want to learn more from you. Elijah, you've got more in there. Would you please teach me more?" And so he says, "As surely as the Lord lives, as long as you live, I will not leave you." So they went to Jericho. I feel like a broken record because history repeats itself a little bit. Jericho is one of those special places where God showed up, right? If you grew up in the church, you might have grown up singing a song about Jericho, and you might have in your mind this story of how they circled the walls of Jericho and they shouted, and what happens to the walls? The walls come crumbling down, right? And then God says, "Do not rebuild these walls. Leave these rocks here, so that in the future you can tell your kids and their kids and your kids' kids and then the kids' kids' kids and the grandkids, and then those kids at Fairhaven are going to learn about the walls of Jericho because of these rocks, because of what God did here." And so I can imagine Elijah taking Elisha and putting his hands on the rocks of this broken down wall. And so, "You see these rocks, Elisha? Let me tell you the story of Jericho. Because when God makes promises, when God calls you into difficult situations, when God calls you to face your enemies, or when God calls you to face the scariest thing you've ever faced, He's there. In fact, you couldn't knock those walls down if you tried. God can." This is a story you need to know, Elisha. And the teaching lesson's over, and it's time for me to move on. And so he says that he's going to move on again. He says, "Stay here, the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." Now, where's the Jordan? Let's go. I don't think I showed you the picture of Jericho. Maybe it came up, but go back. What does Elisha say? We already know this, right? We know what he's going to say. He says, "Nope, I'm going to come with you." Same thing. Here's the picture. I'm messing you all up back there. I know. Let's go ahead and put that verse up. "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So the two of them walked on. Okay, here's the picture of where the Jordan is. Look, they went from the Jordan to Gilgal to Bethel to Jericho and back to the Jordan. It's a big loop. It's another historical loop. Elijah says, "I'm going to leave, but you can come with me, I guess, and we'll teach you another lesson." And so they get back to where they began. And I want to read you this from Joshua chapter 4, which goes back to Jeremy's message last week. "When all the people had crossed the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, 'Now choose 12 men, one from each tribe. Tell them, take 12 stones from the very place where the priests are standing in the middle of the Jordan. Carry them out and pile them up at the place where you will camp tonight.' So Joshua called together the 12 men he had chosen, one from each of the tribes of Israel. He told them, 'Go into the middle of the Jordan in front of the ark of the Lord your God.'" Remember, the water's piled up at this time. "Each of you must pick up a stone and carry it on your shoulder, 12 stones in all, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. We will use these stones to build a memorial. In the future, your children will ask, 'What do these stones mean?' Then you can tell them, 'They remind us that the Jordan River stopped flowing when the Ark of the Lord's Covenant came across. These stones will stand as a memorial among the people of Israel forever. So the men did as Joshua had commanded them. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan River, one for each tribe, just as the Lord had told Joshua. They carried them to the place where they camped for the night and constructed the memorial there, which was what place? Gilgal. Got that? They pull the rocks out of the river. They bring them to Gilgal. They set them up there. But now they're at the River Jordan. And now check this out. This will come up on the screen. Then they camped at Gilgal, just east of the Jordan. It was there at Gilgal that Joshua piled up the 12 stones taken from the Jordan River. Then Joshua said to the Israelites, "In the future, your children will ask, 'What do these stones mean?' Then you can tell them, 'This is where the Israelites crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the river right before your eyes, and he kept it dry until you were all across, just as he did at the Red Sea when he dried it up until we had all crossed over. He did this so the nations of the earth might know that the Lord's hand is powerful, and so that you might fear the Lord forever.'" But then there's another place they set up rocks. This is verse 9. It won't come up on your screen. But Joshua also set up another pile of 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing, and they are there to this day. So I imagine Joshua coming. He can't touch it this time. It's in the middle of the Jordan. And I imagine him saying to Elisha, "You see those rocks there? Remember the ones at Gilgal? Same time. They piled them up there and they piled them up here because this is the place where they crossed. This is the place where they crossed." And he gives them the lesson and he teaches them. And then Elisha says, he says he wants to go forward. And Elisha says, turns to Elisha and says, "Tell me what I can do for you before I go. Tell me what I can do for you." It's the end of the lesson, end of the story. And Elijah says this amazing thing. He says this, "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit and become your successor." Elisha is the follower of Elijah. And Elijah teaches him and pours into him. And at the end of the lesson, Elijah says, "What else can I do for you?" And Elisha says, "Make me twice the man you are." Now, have you ever said this? Like, I want to be half the man or half the person, you know? Elisha's got some guts here. "I want to be twice the man you are, Elijah." And Elijah says, "Listen, I can teach you all kinds of lessons about history, but I cannot do that. I'll tell you what, if you see me taken up into heaven, then God gives that to you. God can do that. God can make you twice the person that I've been. Because God has made me who I am, and I was just a country boy. But God called me out." Elisha and Elijah cross the river. They part the Jordan. He takes his coat, parts the Jordan, right where the Israelites had parted the Jordan. He crosses. And Elijah is taken up in this whirlwind. Elisha sees him. He sees him, and so he knows that God has answered his prayer. And Elisha picks up the coat. And this is the moment I want you to think about. Elisha picks up the coat and is now standing there without his mentor, who he now calls father. First time in the whole story, he calls him father because he's poured into him like a father. He's a spiritual father. And now Elisha has a choice. Do you think it occurred to him to go back to plowing the fields and the oxen? I do. Because this is a place of fear. For some of you, you've lost a parent or a great spiritual parent of yours, and you took on the mantle. And all of a sudden, you looked around and realized, "I'm the oldest son. I'm the oldest daughter. I'm the one that this is passed on to. And I don't know if I'm ready for this." Or maybe somebody invited you to mentor somebody in church, or they asked you to be a Sunday school teacher, or they asked you to volunteer for VBS, or they said, "Hey, there's this person who wants to step across the line of faith and they need to be discipled," and somebody came and asked you and you're like, I don't know if I can do that. This is the moment to pick up the coat and to step forward on the new path off the merry-go-round of what God has called you to. You see, God provides people in our lives to teach us along the way, to remind us of the past and what God has done in the past, and to help launch us into a new future. Elisha has a critical moment here, and he picks up the coat, and he hits the water, and it parts. Elisha steps into what God has called him into, And God is with Elijah. And I'm going to give you a quick ending to the story because I want to be able to close. Do you know how many miracles Elijah did in his life? I mean, there's prophecies and miracles, but of like physical miracles, you can go back and look at some 8 miracles. Elisha asks, I want to be twice the man Elijah is. Guess how many miracles happened during Elisha's life? 15. It's like so close, right? We're like, so close. Then this happens. 2 Kings 13. Elisha dies and is buried. And then verse 21. Once while some Israelites were burying a man, suddenly they saw a band of raiders. So they threw the man's body into Elisha's tomb. When the body touched Elisha's bones, the man came back to life and stood on his feet. 16. God made Elisha twice the man Elijah was. Let me just wrap this up. Some of you are on a merry-go-round. I don't know what the merry-go-round is. Lots of us here, lots of different stuff going on in our lives. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a job. Maybe it's a habit. Maybe it's an addiction. Maybe it's a belief about yourself that you're just not good enough, that you can't do what God has called you to. Story after story after story in the Bible shows a person saying, why don't you come with me? I think there are some things you can learn. And then actually, I think you can do more than I did. Do you realize we stand on the shoulders of giants? God has placed people in your life, parents, teachers, mentors, to help you to look back to the past so that you can go into the future with a new story. If you're like me and you try to do it alone, I do this way too often. I try to go it alone and then I talk myself out of it. But it's when people lead me and I follow people that I trust, that are following God, that I hear His voice and I can see that He shows up and He's faithful. It's still scary to step into the Jordan River. It will always be scary to step into the Jordan River. But when you've walked through the river with your mentor and he's told you the stories of how many times this has happened before and that God shows up and then he hands you the mantle and says, now it's your turn. I don't know what it is for you. I do know this. We're better together. And we're not meant to be alone. And I do know this. God is calling you to something new. And I do know this. It takes the courage to say yes. For some of you, that's saying yes to baptism. For some of you, that's saying yes to mentoring somebody. For some of you, that's saying yes to, I don't know what it is. I want you to ask the question, what is God asking me to say yes to? Who can help me? And how do I know that God is going to be faithful? Let's pray. Father, when I read about heroes of the faith, sometimes I feel so small. And God, when I'm confronted with my own daily grind of plowing with the oxen, or when I'm faced with my own river I need to cross, or I'm faced with whatever it is, enemies I'm coming against, God, I feel so small. And yet, God, you remind us that we're not alone. Even Jesus said, I will send my spirit to be with you, because when you don't have a person, you have me. And in addition to that, I give you people. Love one another, be with one another, support each other, teach each other. Go, make followers of mine and teach them everything I have taught you to do. Elijah did that long ago with Elisha. Jesus did that with his disciples. I have a name of 5, 6, 7 people who've done that with me. And I have names of some people, God, that you've called me to do that with. God, I pray that we would not go alone. And that you would call us into big things. And that you would give us the courage to pick up that cloak, to strike the water, and to step in where you've called us. God, I pray specifically for the people in this room today who are scared, who know that something has to change in their marriage, or who know that there's an addiction that they haven't told anybody about. There's a habit that they can't seem to break. There's a merry-go-round that they have to get off of, and they're scared.
Yeah, God, I'm scared too. Maybe you remember Elijah putting his hand on the stone and going, yeah, they were scared too. When they marched around those walls, they were scared. When they walked through that river, they were scared. But God, you are bigger. And you show up. Thank you, God, for showing up. And I pray that you would show up on our merry-go-round and help us step into the future with you. I pray these things in the name and the power of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.